Hi, this is Ryan Dawson of the Anti-Neocon Report, and we have the FDA in the crosshairs today. Joining me back on the program is Dr. Nishio. You've heard us talk about the MicroWire case. We're going to talk about another case, which also involves the theft of intellectual property, and this time with the Food and Drug Administration. They have been caught and admitted that they are guilty of one of the biggest thefts of intellectual property in history, and this has gone back several years. But as of June 21st of this year, the acting commissioner for the FDA has admitted that they stole the property, admitted in a way through omission. Dr. Nishio, welcome back. It's good to have you on again. I'm going to have you explain what's going on here. How you doing?
Good, Ryan, and thank you very much for having me back on the show. I really appreciate it. Yeah, today we're talking about the Food and Drug Administration. As most folks probably out there already realize, or may not, the FDA is responsible for about 80% of the regulation of the U.S. food supply, and about 20% goes to the Department of Agriculture. Now, the FDA not only deals with food, but they also deal with drugs and that sort of thing. They have a very, very broad mandate. Well, in fact,
you deal with illegal drugs.
Exactly. In 2011, a new law was passed, and it was called the Food Safety Modernization Act, which was really the result of a lot of hard work, mostly in the House, by Chairman Emeritus Dingell at the time on the Energy and Commerce Oversight Committee in the House, who pushed very hard for this new legislation and look specifically at the issue of trying to do a better job of preventing food poisonings before they occurred instead of just waiting for it to happen and deal with the consequences. Now, it costs billions and billions of dollars every year and people getting sick and losing work and in some cases actually dying from foodborne illnesses like E. coli and that sort of thing. And what the Congress was trying to do is basically give the government a proverbial kick in the ass to try and do a better job of stopping things before they happen, because that's the best measure of safety performance, stopping a bad thing before it happens.
They've said that since Ben Franklin, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. But yeah, we still haven't learned that lesson, because a pound of cure involves a lot of industries and a lot of money, and they sure do like it.
Absolutely on target. Benjamin Franklin, you know, obviously had it right a long time ago. But so anyway, they passed the Food Safety Modernization Act of 2011, which really focused on trying to find new ways to prevent things from happening. I was going to school at George Washington University, got my doctorate degree in exactly the area of trying to prevent bad things from happening before they happen. I graduated from George Washington in 2006, and I did my dissertation on this very same issue, and I spent probably 5 years doing my doctoral dissertation research. So it was a big deal. I mean, a lot of work. And lo and behold, I found out much later that the FDA got a copy of my doctoral dissertation, and basically they plagiarized it. They took my doctoral dissertation, they took all the ideas about prevention and today what's called predictive analytics, which involves the use of metadata from the cloud, or a lot of data from the cloud, retrieved in real time and then subjected to computer analytics or algorithms and other things, so that out of that mass of data, you can actually predict, or in our case, scientifically, project what might happen and how likely it is to occur. The obvious connection with food, is, you know, it's apparent. this is the type of technology that you absolutely need to begin to do a better job of preventing bad things before they happen, including food poisoning. Well, one of the things that's true is FDA recognized this, and in 2007, they released a report, and the report was called National Food Protection Strategy. And it laid out all of the things that the FDA was going to do in response to, you know, growing pressures on the Hill and other places to try and do a better job of preventing rather than reacting to these incidents. The report plagiarized my doctoral dissertation. It was basically everything in my doctoral dissertation laid out. You know, on the one hand, you're very, very, you know, pleased that people want to, you know, plagiarize your good research. But on the other hand, you know, it's not a very ethical thing to do. And there was another problem. What I had done because of the quality of the research is basically filed for and received a patent for this technology, which now represents over a $5 billion a year market share across industry verticals. Huge, huge amount of money associated with this new way of looking at data. Then what happened is for several years, we took my ideas and produced tools. They're computer tools that would basically help the food industry do things in a preventive rather than a reactive mode. It would actually use all of the stuff that I just talked about to project problems before they actually occur. And of course, the idea was to project the problem and then intervene soon enough that we could prevent it. And then we would use prevention as the number one objective of our systems. And of course, since Murphy's rule could play out at any time, we also kept in mind better ways to respond and to mitigate, you know, food safety emergencies. Anyway, what we did is we built a whole range of different tools to address different aspects of food safety and security, and in that business it's called food defense, not security. And what we did is basically develop these tools. We also created a huge metadata repository of information called our poison database, which was the first attempt to use very large amounts of data and by actually reverse engineering real world incidents to figure out what we could have done better to prevent those and then use that information to develop new food standards. So that was the approach we took. In December of 2012, we discovered that the FDA was in fact taking all of our patented information and the information that we were sharing with them. We were working with FDA and the Food Defense Team under a proprietary arrangement, and that involves federal law where basically government employees aren't allowed to take the intellectual property of small businesses. If they do, they're liable to, you know, be fired from their jobs and have to pay a fine. So it's a big deal. It's a criminal thing under Title 18 U.S.C. 1905 that they can't do this. Well, anyway,
Watches the watchers, though, is a problem.
Yeah. So I guess in retrospect, it was unfortunate because the FDA didn't follow the law. They basically took all of our patents and trade secrets and they stole it. And they stole it through their contractors. For example, one of the major support contractors to FDA is Battelle Memorial Institute. Another organization that works really closely with FDA is called the Grocery Manufacturers Association, which represents 300 of the largest food companies across the world. So these two organizations are really, really big deal organizations. What we found is that there was collusion between FDA and other folks to basically steal and reproduce our stuff and basically leave us in the dust. Everybody knew that we were a really small business and that we didn't have enough money to be able to sue them in court. And that's because patent cases are among the most expensive and most litigious legal cases there are. It's really, really expensive, and it takes a long time to win those types of cases. And in most circumstances like ours, when small businesses get their stuff stolen, they go out of business and they just fade away. You know, it's like General MacArthur's statement, you know, his last statement to Congress, you know, just fade away. And that's what happens to them. So anyway, what we did...
We don't have a justice system. We have a legal system. And that legal system is based on money.
Yes, it is. And that's the problem. It's no longer based on right or wrong. And I can really attest to that in this case, Ryan. It's not about right or wrong. It's simply about, you know, who's going to make the most money. And it's really a system where greed drives the system anymore. It's not about justice. It's about greed and your ability to buy justice, which is really a sad state of affairs for our nation. So what we did is, after the theft of this stuff, I created a new organization, it wasn't a new organization, but I kind of changed the mission of the organization to basically look at other instances from across the country where people had experienced similar things, the theft of their intellectual property. And one of the folks that we work with at the Institute for Complexity Management are people like, you know, Jim O'Keefe, who we talked about earlier in the case of demodulation. Well, the reason I started that program to, you know, a charitable program to help people like Jim was to try and find new ways to turn this around, to keep small businesses alive when they're being unfairly competed with and put down by their own government. And part of the new approach to the problem that we've started to pursue is under common law. Mm-hmm. Now, most of the laws that relate to intellectual property and patents and trade secrets really arise from government statutes and abstract codes and texts where the government
to a judge.
Yeah, where the government itself writes the rules. So when you go in and you try to tell your situation to a judge, the judge looks at the statutes, and the statutes by default are instruments of the government. They're not instruments of the people and instruments to achieve justice. Now, we do have a safeguard in our system that allows us to deal with that problem, and that's called common law. Common law is different from statutes because it actually involves real judges and real people with real world problems where the judge just looks at the facts and decides whether or not justice has been meted out properly. And this creates a type of law, common law, that allows you to make judgments based on the previous judgments that have been made by other judges that involve the things that you're talking about. And this is really, really important because it's the only way that judges create law. In other words, if they see a first impression and there's no real law that meets out justice, they can actually enter the situation and create new law. A very, very powerful safeguard built into the system by our forefathers to assure that this works. And of course, it arose out of what's called common law in Britain, And our legal systems are quite different, but similar in one way, and that involves the use of common law. So under common law, we filed an affidavit of truth with Dr. Ostroff over at the Food and Drug Administration. He's the acting commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration. There's been some recent changes over there. And we sent him basically a series of statements that just simply state the facts of what happened in the theft of our intellectual property.
And that was back in May 7th.
Yeah,
right?
This was actually at very end of April. I think they got this on May 7th. They received this. And from May 7th, they had 45 days to basically say, you know, this is untrue. There is nothing in here that you said that's true. In other words, they had a chance to rebut every fact that we listed in the affidavit. Well, we let more than 45 days elapse, and we contacted FDA. Before we sent out a press release saying that they had not responded, I wanted to give Dr. Ostroff an opportunity to respond. He didn't. And what happens is, if you don't respond in 45 days, according to common law, everything I've said in this affidavit now becomes fact, or as they say in legal terms, dispositive.
That's how my old boss got her book published. She had state secrets privilege put on her, so she couldn't write about some of the things she
really
knew about when she worked at the FBI. So she wrote it all out and said, which part of this would you like to refute, and let the month go by? And, of course, they didn't respond, and so she was legally allowed to write the book she wanted and tell everything. You can always bank on the government's incompetence to work in your favor in a case like that. Where you tell them they have to do something, they're not going to actually work.
I just want to laud Sybil Edmonds. She is one of the most courageous women on the planet. She really took on the bureaucracy over very important issues, and I believe that she deserves a lot of the credit for, you know, our ability to deal with terrorism today. Without her, I'm not sure the system would have changed at all. So
she did all that prior to social media and YouTube, too. She was organizing the old-fashioned way and sticking it to the man. She definitely
I just really respect her work, and she's done a great job. The nation owes her a debt. So anyway, we waited for the 45 days, and they didn't respond. So what this tells you, if you get a chance, any of the listeners to go to our John Galt program for investigative studies, and I'll give you the website address in a second, you can have a chance to look at these. Really what this is it shows that the government really, really is off center. In other words, that they do bad things to the American people. And then they try to cover it up. And when that doesn't work, they try to force it down legal, narrow pathways where people cannot afford to defend themselves. So
is
what it does is raise the question
of
representative government. Do we really have a representative government? Do we really have justice in America? These affidavits of truth, especially the one to the FDA, shows that we don't. We do not. This is a legal system that's based on greed and money, and it is not based on justice. And I think we need some big changes, and I'm hoping that the listeners will take an interest in what we are trying to do, because it's really important for the future of America that we step in, that we as citizens take control of what appears to be a devolving system. Humans are supposed to get better over time. They're not supposed to get worse.
Wow.
And You mentioned earlier before the broadcast about the movie Idiocracy. Well, I think what we need to do is, you know, put on our thinking caps.
Well, it's supposed to be a comedy, not a prophecy, but it turns out it's like this case is similar to MicroWire in the sense that in the way they're crushing innovation, basically the government just is a medium that facilitates theft where they steal from small businesses and then in secret go and give all those trade secrets to the establishment businesses, sometimes foreign companies too, because those are the plutocratic billionaires that lobby and pay them a lot of money.
And holy mackerel. Really well said. You've articulated that better than I could. That's a very, very articulate statement of exactly what's happening.
And that's all for the freebie on the podcast. You can catch this whole podcast on YouTube, still free. I know that takes more downloading time or whatever on your cell phones, and you can download the ones on ANC, member or not, we give you that option. But if you do become a member, you can get this full episode and all the other episodes full, $5 a month or $50 a year, and it helps me to make the documentary films that I'm planning, Empire Unmasked, JFK, another film on the war on drugs that's yet to be titled, and more, much, much more. So thanks for your time, and please consider signing up at least for a month, and you can go download all the prior podcasts.